Well, today we'll plan to finish up Daniel chapter 2. And where we left off, Daniel told what the dream was to King Nebuchadnezzar, what dream that he had dreamed, and then now he's going to tell him what it means. And so we will start with verse 36 of Daniel chapter 2. This is the dream. Now we will tell the interpretation of it before the king. You, O king, are a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. So he's telling King Nebuchadnezzar basically the same thing that Jesus told Pilate. You wouldn't have any power at all if the God of heaven hadn't placed you here. So basically, he's telling him this. The God of heaven has given you this kingdom. He's given you this power, strength, and glory. And, the God of heaven, the creator, is completely unknown to King Nebuchadnezzar. But he's about to know right here, and he gives high praise to God at the end. King Nebuchadnezzar does. Verse 38, and wherever the children of men dwell, or the beast of the field and the birds of the heaven, he has given them into your hand and has made you ruler over them all. You are this head of gold. But after you shall rise another kingdom inferior to yours. Then another, a third kingdom, made of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. And now, this is what we now know as the Greek Empire, and with Alexander the Great. And he conquered what they thought was the entire earth, and it was a huge, massive empire that he conquered in a short time. I believe something like 3 years is unbelievable. And in fact, at the end, his last conquest, he sat down and wept because there was no more land and no other kingdoms, no other countries for him to conquer. And so he cried and wept because he couldn't keep going. And then he died not long after that. They think maybe he was poisoned or something. But then his kingdom was divided as the chest and the belly and the thighs were split as four pieces, and his kingdom was divided in four. So that's the bronze. And then verse 40, and the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything. And like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others. Okay. Now, Kaufman's summary of this dream about these metals, he said we went from gold, silver, bronze, and iron. And the value decreased. Gold was the most valuable, then silver, then bronze, then iron. So the value of the metals decreased with each new kingdom that came. And so Kaufman's thought, what that meant was the spiritual value of each kingdom declined. So they became more morally depraved. They became more pagan as time went on. Their spiritual value went down just as these metals were going down in value. And so I don't know anything to counter that. That sounds as good as anything. And he was the only one that commented on that. Now, Don Simpson talked about it another way, and he said that these metals got stronger and stronger as they went down. Gold is the softest metal. Silver is harder than gold. Bronze is harder than silver, and iron is the hardest of all of these four metals. And he said that represented that each of these empires were getting physically stronger, and had more earthly power as they went down, by showing that these metals were stronger and stronger. And that made a lot of sense to me, because the Medo-Persians were stronger than the Babylonians, the Greeks were stronger than the Medo-Persians, and then the Romans were the strongest of all of them, and they were represented as iron, and iron is the hardest of all of these metals. These other metals are somewhat soft and easily molded, for sure, like the gold and then silver some, but gold is the most easily malleable metal of these four, and iron would be the hardest. So that made a lot of sense to me, that what Don Simpson came up, and probably it's the mixture of both. You could say their spiritual worth was going down over time, because we know by the time the Greek and the Roman Empire, now these are all pagan countries and kingdoms, none of them were righteous, but maybe like the Ninevites, the Babylonians were more susceptible and would have been more easily to repent to God, just like the Ninevites, that pagan, notoriously wicked city. They did. They all bowed the knee and sat in sackcloth and ashes and repented for their disobedience to God. Maybe the Babylonians would be the closest of these nations to repent before God, and the Romans, I think very likely they would be the least likely to repent before God, because we just know of all of the Greek and the Roman mythology that's still prevalent today and widely available, and that's just how pagan that they were. And everything they did went around all of these false gods and these false idols. And and Paul even ran into that as he was on his missionary journeys. And he went into maybe his Ephesus, but wherever he went into, it was just all these idols. Well, it was of this goddess Diana for one. But then there were many, many idols, just idol to every god under the sun. He just couldn't believe it. And then he ran upon this one idol that just in case they forgot one, they didn't want to offend some god. And so they had this idol and said, to the unknown god. And so that's where the Apostle Paul starts his speech on Mars Hill and tells them, well, I'm going to talk to you about this god that is unknown to you. And it's the creator. He shouldn't be unknown to you, but unfortunately he is. And since I saw that, that's what I'm going to tell you about, is to the unknown God to you. Okay, verse 41. Whereas you saw the feet and the toes, partly of potter's clay. Now we're talking about the Roman Empire. And partly of iron. The kingdom shall be divided, yet the strength of the iron shall be in it. Just as you saw the iron mixed with the ceramic clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. As you, so at this point, what Don Simpson, I liked what he said about this. This iron mixed with clay very likely represents, the clay represents all of these countries that Rome has conquered. And iron does not mix, clay does not mix with iron. And so none of these countries that Rome conquered, they did not integrate into the Roman rule. And the prime example is with these Israelites, these Hebrews. Here they were occupied by the Romans. They did not like the soldiers being present all of the time in their streets. They did not like having to undergo and live under Roman law. They definitely did not like having to pay taxes to the Roman king, Caesar. So this is representative of the iron and the clay did not mix. The clay were these other countries that were conquered by the Roman Empire, and they never did mix with them. And so ultimately it made them more fragile. And we see that here Rome had to go and fight all of these battles, different places, and they came to ultimately destroy Jerusalem, and because they did not mix with the Roman Empire and they were rebelling. And this happened with several, and ultimately that weakened the Roman Empire as a whole over time. So verse 43, as you saw iron mixed with ceramic clay, they will mingle with the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. So that is Don Simpson's explanation of what that means, and that makes as much sense as anything, that the clay were these conquered nations and did not mix with the iron being the Roman Empire. Okay, now verse 44, and this is a key, one of the major key verses of the entire Bible. And if people would just understand this one verse, it would take out a lot of misunderstandings about God's kingdom, because we'll read it here. And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. So in the days of these kings, in the days of the Roman Empire, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed. So right there, we know that God's kingdom, it was prophesied here by Daniel that it would be, and it was established and created in the time of the Roman Empire. And unfortunately, most all of the denominations that I've even heard of, members of the Church of Christ, deny that God has created or established his kingdom yet, that it's sometime future to us. Whereas we know just from this verse that God established his kingdom during the days of the Roman Empire. And so this is a very, very important verse, and it would take out a lot of confusion and misunderstanding and set things more clearly about God's kingdom. And it's very, very simple and very plain to understand. Okay, so now, of course, verse 44 and 45, we're talking about God's kingdom. So this is this fifth kingdom, which is not an earthly kingdom, and the Israelites misunderstood that, and people today still misunderstand that. They think it's going to be an earthly kingdom, and it never was. Jesus tried to set that straight. He even talked to Pilate that his kingdom is not of this world. If it were of this world, then his servants, his disciples would fight, but it's not of this world. Always designed to just be a heavenly kingdom, a spiritual kingdom, not an earthly kingdom like these other four that are mentioned here. But this is the fifth kingdom, and this fifth kingdom will last forever. It was established 2,000 years ago, and it will never end. Okay, so we're continuing this thought about God's kingdom that he established during the Roman Empire days. Verse 45. Inasmuch as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain and its interpretation is sure. So, Daniel is telling King Nebuchadnezzar that the God of heaven, the Creator, has given you this dream, and then He has sent me to tell you what the dream was and what it means. Okay. And now King Nebuchadnezzar, he understands this completely. He appreciates this. And listen to what he says in what he does here in 46 and says in 47. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face, prostrate before Daniel, and commanded that they should present an offering of incense to him. The king answered Daniel and said, "Truly your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, since you could reveal this secret." So, that's pretty high praise coming from a pagan god. He realizes that this is the God of all gods. This is God that sent him this dream and sent Daniel to him to tell him what it meant was above any god that he's ever even heard of, which we know all of these other gods that he's ever known about were all false gods. They never were any gods of any sort. They're just idols in the imagination of men's minds. But he's giving a high praise and honor to the Creator right here. Then verse 48. Now he is going to fulfill this promise that he made from verse 6. So then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts, and he made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief administrator over all the wise men of Babylon. And this is a fulfillment of the promise that he told these wise men in verse 6. I'll read it. "However, if you tell the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts, rewards, and great honor. Therefore, tell me the dream and its interpretation." So, gifts, rewards, and great honor, and that's exactly what he got. Then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief administrator over all of the wise men of Babylon. So, this king is showing to be an honorable man. There are many kings all through history that they say, "If you do something for me, then I will do something in return for you." Well, the people did their part, and then nothing came back, or maybe hardship came back. But that's not what King Nebuchadnezzar. He appreciated this, and he held to his word to his credit. And then we end this chapter with verse 49. Also, Daniel petitioned the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king. So, Daniel petitioned, and the king granted the request that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be set over the affairs of the various provinces of Babylon. So whatever that was, their governors or satraps, whatever. I'm not real sure exactly what this satrap is, but it comes into play in the next chapter. And it's because of this that King Nebuchadnezzar comes up with this idol, this idolatrous statue, and commands that everyone, all of these administrators, governors, treasurers, judges, all these government officials bow down and worship before this idol. Well, of course, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego could not do that. Unbeknownst to King Nebuchadnezzar, these four, but we're talking about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they held out and refused to eat any meat that was sacrificed to an idol, or any unclean meats, or any foods that were not acceptable for a Hebrew. They've already gone through this battle. And even though their lives were very likely on the line then, now King Nebuchadnezzar never knew anything about it because their supervisor handled all of this on his own and there was no negative repercussions, so he let them do that. Well, it's coming up again and their lives are going to be threatened and they are going to be given the death penalty. But God is going to intervene. And so we will start, Lord willing, next week, this famous Daniel chapter 3 chapter. Any questions or comments on this?